Mr. Sadasti, Atari 8-Bit Productivity Podcast, Season 1, Episode 5.
Hello and welcome back. Wow, the first minor milestone, Episode 5. The last couple have come quick because the programs haven't been very in-depth. I'll likely only get one more episode in between now and the end of the year. I'm currently working on two episodes, one for the holidays and one for the regular next installment. I want to have the holiday episode available mid-December, and the next regular episode, while not necessarily in-depth, is a little lengthy, so I want to have it out the first week of January. So, on to Decision Maker. This software is not your average Magic 8-Ball, though there is software out there that is, but it's more of an entertainment application, so I won't be covering it. If you are interested in it, however, it's called Executive Decision Maker, and it's by First Star Software. It looks to be modeled after the 8-Balls, and more specifically, the Radio Shack Executive Decision Maker of the early 80s, which was a gadget that did the same kind of thing, but it lit up the answer with a little red LED. Now, Decision Maker is a sophisticated pro-con list that helps you decide between two or more different choices. It uses your weightings or values for each of several attributes that you define for each choice. It balances this against your overall weightings of the attributes themselves. The intent is to lead you to the logical choice.
Technical data.
Decision Maker was published by APX, which is the Atari Program Exchange. It was published for Color Computer Concepts, and the programmer was James L. Brun. It was published on disk and cassette, and there are two different part numbers. For cassette, the part number was APX10044. For disk, it was APX20044. It was published on September 10th of 1981, which was version 1.1, and it was written in 1980, per the code comments. The program size is 8K, and it's written in BASIC, so you must have the BASIC cartridge to run it. It requires 8K for cassette and 16K if you're using disk. The price for version 1.0 on cassette was originally $8.95, although I also saw $6.95 and $7.95, but $8.95 seems to be the actual price. For version 1.1, the original price was $17.95. I don't know why it changed, but it did. Today's price for the $17.95 version would be $48.47. There was no manual, but it was supposed to have been documented to include all subroutines and variables. Perhaps this was on the original disk, but I could not locate it.
Usage notes.
To start the program from cassette, you would load it the same way you would any other program. To start it from disk, you would load it the same way you would start any other program from the disk. In this case, the file is called DCSN, so you would just do load D:DCSN. After it's loaded, you could do a run, or you could combine the two together and just do a run, D:DCSN. Once you run it, the screen draws pretty fast for a basic program. It's a very simple program to use. All the instructions are on the screen. Just follow them and you'll do just fine. The screen is broken down into several different areas. On the far left-hand side, you have a box for attributes. In the middle, you have a box for choices. And on the right, you have a box for weights. So first you enter your choices. These are what you're trying to decide on. You complete the choice entry by entering END. So fill out each one, and then on the last entry you type in END and press return. Second, you'll enter the common attributes among the choices. So if you're trying to decide between fruit and vegetables, two common attributes might be seeds yes and seeds no. These are completely subjective, but need to make sense as they'll be used later in your weight ranking for each choice. So you define your attributes in the same manner, entering them in, and on the last one you type in END and press return. The next thing you'll do is enter a weighting or a rank for each attribute. A higher number means it's more important to you. After you've done that, the next thing you do is you'll enter a weighting or rank for each attribute combined with each choice. Again, a higher number means it's more important to you. After you've entered in all the combinations, the results will be displayed in a graph form and a recommendation is printed at the bottom of the screen. So, pretty easy to use, yeah? So now for the special use case. As some of you may know, I have been struggling with how to organize the seasons. My original intent was to have each season cover a specific application type, but that didn't last long as I, and some listeners, wanted more variety. I altered how it would be handled once, but still not completely satisfied in how it ended up. So currently we have a variety, roughly grouped to no more than 1.5 years apart and limited to 15 or 20 episodes per season, with a lot of subjectivity in between. There are some limitations with that. Well, more than just a few. Namely, I can't do some that I really want to do now, and I can't do any user submissions if they don't fit chronologically. Maybe seasons were just a silly plan all along. So now I have an opportunity to use some productivity software to make a productive decision for me. Though this one, like the last one, Atari Mailing List, stretches the self-imposed time constraint by a few months, but still inside the first 2 years. So, keeping with custom, I use Decision Maker to decide how to handle seasons. And here's how it breaks down. First, I entered the choices. Stay same, for keeping the seasons as they are. By EP count, for seasons limited by episode count only, irregardless of the year or program type. By year, for seasons limited by years in which case only programs for a certain year would be featured in episodes. Or by type, for seasons limited by program type, in which case only programs of a certain type would be featured in episodes, which was my original intent. Next, I entered the common attributes. So I chose three. Variety, well, for variety. Quantity per year, for quantity per year. And quantity per type, for quantity per type. Then I entered the base weightings for each attribute. Now, this is where it gets a little tricky. I decided that variety was most important, so I gave it a weighting of 75. And I gave quantity per year and quantity per type both weightings of 0. And last, I entered the weightings for each attribute and choice combination. I'm not going to bore you with all the numbers, but you can find them on the website. So it went through variety and all the different choices. It went through quantity per year and all the different choices, and quantity per type and all the different choices. So all in all, there were 12 different weightings that I had to put in. So the results are in, drum roll please, to have seasons by episode count. Okay, so basically the result was that of the base attribute weightings that I gave, well, at least in this case. I could have saved a bunch of time just writing those three things down and picking, but then you wouldn't get to listen to me talk about 30-plus year old software that no one will really use anyway.
Summary.
Let's start with complaints. I have just a few. First, when the program is done, you really don't know. It sits on the results screen until you press return, in which case you get the ready prompt, but your cursor's still turned off. Number two, you can't edit if you make any mistakes. So if you meant to type in 25 and you hit 23, too bad. You get to start all over. And last, there is no load and save of your choices and attributes. This would have been nice for doing different weightings for different comparisons. Now it's time for perspectives. If it was 1981, would I use this? Sure. Sometimes when making decisions, it becomes difficult to juggle all the pros and cons in our heads. I created more than a few pro-con lists in my lifetime, as I'm sure much of you have as well. These were generally limited to two choices, with one having the most pros winning. Decision Maker makes it easy to decide on two or more choices. Today, would I use it? It's doubtful. I've built spreadsheets in the past to decide among several different choices. These included common attributes with green shading for those of the most value to me, as well as raw values. The winner was chosen from the one having the most positive, inclusive of raw values and cell shading. Still a bit of a mental factoring goes on in that, but it's worked for me in the past. One example I can think of is deciding between video cards and having attributes like price, speed, number of polygons, etc. The biggest drawback for this program is its inability to save and load your data. So you have to have all your data ready before using it. For things requiring research, like the video card for example, you'll end up storing the information somehow or somewhere, whether it be on a notepad, a spreadsheet, or a text document. Overall, I give this a bit rating of 4. As good as it is at doing its job, the lack of editing mistakes and having to start over is the biggest hit on the rating. The other thing that brought it down, and maybe this is even bigger, was the inability to save and load the choices and attributes, thus making repeated comparisons really, really annoying.
Corrections.
Well, it's that time again. Time for another correction. This time it's regarding Atari Calculator, Season 1, Episode 3. So the mistake was regarding my use of the RPN notation. The correct syntax would have been 1 enter, 2 enter, 3 times 4, divide, plus. And that would have come up with a solution of 2.5, not 2.25. An alternate RPN form would be 2 enter, 3 times 4, divide, 1 plus. Again, coming up with 2.5 instead of 2.25 as I had listed. Thank you, Lynn, for correcting me on that.
Listener feedback.
Okay, so far on Facebook, I think there are about 37 likes, and I appreciate all of them. Thank you. Keep them coming. And on iTunes, I don't think there are very many out there, but if you do subscribe there, please go out and give a rating out there. I would appreciate it. Thanks. So the first feedback I have from a listener is from Mr. Fish via the Atari Age forums. He says, "Nice job. These are great. You should cross-post on the 8-bit forum. You'd get a lot more attention. People like these sort of things, and your podcast is unique. I just found out about these today, when I casually noticed your SIG. I rarely look at SIGs, and I rarely venture outside the 8-bit forums. Keep up the good work." Thank you, Mr. Fish, and as you've already seen, I did go out and do a cross-post into the 8-bit forum, and I got some feedback from there as well, which we'll cover here shortly. Next is from Snicklin, again via the Atari Age forums. "I am listening to Inverse Ataski at the moment, as well as Player Missile and Antic. I am reading and writing Pro Atari and reading ABUC. We've got it good at the moment. Very good." Yes, indeed we do. With all the hardware stuff that's going on right now, like the RAM 320XE and all the podcasts that are Atari related, I would totally agree with you. And if none of you have checked out the Player Missile or Antic podcasts, I would encourage you to go do so right now. They're both very good. Next up is Bill from Atari Age as well, in response to Snicklin's comment. He says, "I second that. With a handful of great podcasts, it's like back in the day, I know Ferg won't like that, waiting for the next issue of Antic, Analog, or Compute to show up in the mailbox to get some great Atari content. Regards, Bill." Yes, Bill, I think you're right. We absolutely do have it good here, and these are all great podcasts. Thank you for your comments. And we have yet another from Atari Age regarding the 3 podcasts. This one is from Fifth Player. "I also listen to all 3 and enjoy them all. Inverse Ataski is a great name and a great premise for a podcast." He asks, "Are you planning to cover some of the type-in productivity apps on the podcast? I'm thinking primarily of SpeedScript and SpeedCalc, though I'm sure there are others." Thanks for the compliments, first of all, and though I hadn't specifically set out to cover type-ins, there are a few that were on my radar. SpeedScript and SpeedCalc were in particular, so yes, they will be covered. I used SpeedScript extensively through high school and sometimes Atari Writer, but favored SpeedScript due to the use of the True Descender font. I really got a lot of use out of that one. Next is Paul via Facebook regarding Atari Mailing List Season 1 Episode 4. "The starting at column 2 thing you mentioned, a pet peeve you have of many Atari programs, was because of a lot of the color TVs of the day would cut off the left edge of the screen. And since most people were using TVs, not monitors, programmers had to account for that. With a program like Text Wizard, which I used extensively in high school and college, you could choose whether or not you wanted to do that. In my case, using an RCA XL100 color TV, I had to make use of that feature. I don't recall if other programs gave you that option, but I'm sure there must have been some that did." Thank you for the explanation, Paul. I figured it had something to do with TVs. The TV I had correctly displayed all columns without clipping any parts. It was an RCA 17-inch, roughly 1982, and I don't have any idea what the model was. I also don't recall seeing any clipping on friends' TVs or the display units in the stores. Maybe that was just dumb luck. I will be featuring Text Wizard at some point, so stay tuned, and thank you for your comments. Next is 6 via Atari Age forums. I just finished the calculator episode, and now there's yet another one. He's referring to Atari mailing list. I need to move away from my workplace to get enough commuting time for all the Atari podcasts. Seriously, anyone who hasn't listened to Inverse Atascii should give it a try. Thank you, Six, for the compliments. I really appreciate it. And did you see what I did there? Six comments were sixth. Next is Justin via email. I would just like to express how much I enjoy the new Inverse Atascii podcast. I have been listening since the very first broadcast, just as I have also been a loyal listener to the Yantic and Player Missile podcast since day one. What I find particularly refreshing is Inverse Atascii's focus on productivity software. I have been an Atari 8-bit user since Christmas of 1982, when my sister Sarah and I received an Atari 400, which at the time was mainly used for gaming and basic programming. However, over the years my interest has increasingly changed from solely gaming to an emphasis more on the productivity side of the hobby. I now own several original Atari productivity software titles, including Music Composer, Assembler Editor, Logo, Pilot, and Microsoft Basic 2, some of which you may decide to feature on future podcasts. In the future, and following the advice of your podcast, I would like to download further titles, but I have enough now to keep me occupied for the time being. I have found that even though I have never tried or owned the titles that you feature on Inverse Atascii, it is still fascinating learning about the productivity titles of decades past. I am now motivated to learn more. Your website with links and supportive material all in one place is extremely convenient, and all the screenshots superb for giving listeners a visual idea of how the software appears on screen. I also value your Facebook presence, something that Yantic and Player Missile have yet to adopt. I use Facebook an awful lot these days, and it's great to be able to keep updated about the latest episodes and any news relating to Inverse Atascii. I am now a loyal listener and fan of your podcast and eagerly awaiting future shows with great anticipation. With there being 3 Atari 8-bit podcasts now, it can sometimes be slightly tricky keeping up with every show, but I believe you can never have too much Atari 8-bit, so please don't let this put you off. Anyway, I wish you every success with Inverse Atascii and thank you for putting so much time and effort into the show. With very best wishes, Justin. Wow, thanks for taking the time to write in, Justin. I appreciate it. I'm also glad to hear that the podcast is keeping you entertained and informed. I too look forward to doing more episodes, however, I probably will not be covering programming languages. But again, thank you for the kind comments. And the final feedback for this episode. This is from Lynn regarding the Atari Calculator Season 1, Episode 3. This is also where the correction came from earlier. He writes, "While I found your dissection of Atari Calculator interesting, I disagree a little bit on your verdict. While the Atari 800 running calculator isn't a perfect replacement for a programmable handheld calculator, the cheapest comparable HP programmable with only 49 steps cost at least 3 times as much and had a single line display only, as per hpmuseum.org. The Atari had a lot more functions in memory, e.g. hex, oct, bin, so if you had an Atari and needed the occasional calculation without portability, the Atari might have been a good choice. Why Atari did not use label programming, which HP had invented in its basic form, years earlier, I don't know, especially as it would have been really easy to implement on a computer with a full keyboard and full screen editor." Then comes his correction. As for the 1 plus 2 times 3 divided by 4 example, one would either enter 1 enter 2 enter 3 times 4 divide plus or 2 enter 3 times 4 divide 1 plus to get the correct result on an RPN calculator. The idea being that the way of entry forces the user to break down the problem inside out instead of using parentheses that get confusing quickly if you can't see them, as on an algebraic TI calculator. Interestingly, The calculator was ported to the C64 rather recently by the same emulation guru who ported Asteroids and HP Calcs to the Atari. And then he provides a link, which I'll provide in the show notes. So thanks again, Lynn, for the feedback. And yes, comparable handhelds, number of steps, memory locations, were quite a bit more expensive. However, I still disagree on the price comparison, partly in that you can't compare the handheld cost to just the cost of the calculator program. You have to compare the complete package to the complete package, or at least a portion thereof. So the cost of the Atari solution is quite high. Even if you already had an Atari system before the calculator program, there would have been some cost translated into the calculator's use, simply because the calculator program is useless without the rest of the system. So, for example, if you have 9 programs and an Atari system already, and then you purchase Atari calculator, then you have the cost of the Atari calculator program and 1/10 of the system cost added onto it. And what you listed for RPN appears to be correct. I've only used RPN a few times in the past and completely messed that up. My apologies. And it has already been corrected. Thank you for pointing out the mistake and educating me on RPN's use. And yes, labels seem like a no-brainer to me. It's not like labels hadn't been used in programming languages before.
Special thanks.
As always, I'd like to thank you for listening and your continued support, and I appreciate all the comments that everybody has given me. And as a reminder, please make sure you go out to the website so you can find all the supporting material for the podcast.
Contact information.
The show notes can be found on inverseataski.info. It can be found on iTunes using the search term Ataski or Atari. It can be found on Facebook at facebook.com/inverseataski. And you can also follow on Twitter with @inverseataski. To leave comments or suggestions, you can email wade@inverseataski.info or inverseataski@icloud.com. As always, thanks for listening and stay tuned for the next episode. It sits at the same screen at... It sits... With a handful of great prod...
Goodbye.